once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake McClure.
And I'm laughing, trying not to laugh too hard, because there's this console in front of me and there's a computer screen up here. And there's a series of buttons. And the red ones say, stop, Wall Street Journal. Stop, Lynn Woolley. Stop, Rush Limbaugh. Stop, Hannity. Stop, Mark Levin. Stop, Mike Gallagher. Stop, Kim Komando.
Is there a stop Putin on there?
No.
Any of the major threats to the United States?
That should be on there. That should be on there somewhere. Stop Putin. And you could just punch it and it would stop. I just thought the idea of... I don't know. My sense of humor is a little perverted today. I've been in New York City for a week.
That's a problem. That's a problem right there. You're going to start building things and doing empire. Empire State.
Yeah, I guess I got it. I did see the Empire State Building. It's there. And we did see the 9/11 Memorial. And we did see the subway from the inside out several times.
That's nice.
I was quite impressed with it. And I was also quite impressed with the fact that New York City has changed absolutely dramatically since I was last there 40 years ago. 40 years ago...
You were there before 40 years ago.
We kind of breezed in and breezed out.
Just for the Bloomberg interview.
Yeah, we went in and then we stayed in a hotel. I did an interview about a book that I wrote. We went right back out of there again. But to actually walk the streets and realize that you can see a really long ways because the air is clean... Note that there's not trash all over the streets. Note that there's not hookers all over the streets.
What's a hooker? Daddy.
You don't know? and a matter of fact, I may have seen one and not known it, but there certainly weren't any obvious hookers standing around on the streets.
They've just morphed. And they're on the internet now.
I saw exactly one homeless person.
Two
homeless persons
that were obviously
homeless people.
Okay, because a lot of those people could have been just wandering aimlessly for many days.
They were well dressed and they were in a hurry to get someplace, so that generally doesn't. And that's let's put it like this: I see a lot more homeless people in a block in Austin than I saw in the whole of New York City.
Well, the weather's a lot better in Austin than
it is
in New York.
The weather was pretty decent up there.
It's the winters. They don't want to migrate.
40 years ago, there were homeless people all over the place, and I figured out what they did with it.
They just shipped them to Austin.
No. They actually have an island they put them on.
Is it Riker Island?
No. They take it very seriously, and they provide them with shelter and food and mental assistance and medical assistance. And they can't imprison them by any stretch of the imagination.
It's really hard not to imprison someone on an island.
But this is, they can leave anytime they want to. The problem is...
Swim.
So I got to asking, how do you deal with homeless people? And the problem is, here's what happens. There was a guy laying on the sidewalk we were having to go around. It was the only homeless person I saw. So I asked somebody, why do I not see more homeless people? And why do I see that one? And they said, he won't be there very long. And I said, why? And he said, he's blocking the sidewalk. And there's an ordinance against blocking the sidewalk. And the police will come along and pick him up, and they'll give him a choice. They can either charge him with blocking the sidewalk and probably five or six other things by the time they're done, and he goes to jail. Or he can go to this nice facility where they have food and heat and shelter.
I think I saw this on Clockwork Orange.
No.
Did they play Beethoven?
No, I don't know. I don't know what they play there. But the bottom line to it is, he's got the choice of either going and getting some assistance and job training and being gainfully employed as a result of that, or else someplace nice, or he can go to jail. And they, for some reason or another...
Carrot and the stick.
They generally don't choose jail, and as a result, they spend a lot of money dealing with the mental health of the people involved and getting them employable and finding someplace for them to work. And as a result, you just don't see homeless people. And I was just astonished that they've pretty much got the problem under control.
That's really cool. I have some things to talk about that were big news this week.
Really?
Yes.
Big news.
Big news, as in they wrote the letters larger somehow. I guess it's not big.
Those are called headlines.
News. Yes. The caller last hour that was talking about when the best way to take Social Security was, and how to get through the technical maze of taking it at different times led me to talk about the people that were doing the same things, completely legal activities of rolling over their IRAs repeatedly to get to the money without paying the penalty on it. And then when the Labor Department looked around and the IRS said, no, you can't do that anymore. You can only do one of those rollovers a year. The caller was not calling in to talk about how evil the people were that were doing this technique. He wasn't saying these people are evil for trying to get the most out of Social Security. They paid into Social Security. Why shouldn't they get the most that they possibly can? Out of Social Security, I'm going to use that as a baseline here. The Obama administration wrote an executive order that attaches to a law that requires an executive order to be defined that is preventing, they're calling the words inversion of big corporations, where corporations would buy a headquarters in another country and the money that they made overseas would go to that other country and it would never come back to the United States, so they didn't have to pay taxes on it. It's the same concept. There is a method out there that if you earn money overseas, for instance, most of our government contractors that have worked overseas, if they stay out of the country for a certain number of days and don't come back too much, and they earn their money overseas somewhere in the vicinity of $100,000, the first $100,000 that's paid to them, it's a little more than that now, is tax-free, income tax-free from the United States. Because the United States says, we shouldn't tax you on this. You weren't in the United States when you earned it, even though you were working for American companies. Okay. Google, Apple, you go down the list of basically every major new tech firm. General Electric, that's not new, but it's a tech firm. They have little entities or big entities overseas where they transfer all the money that they earn overseas into these little entities, and they amass these huge amounts of money. And politicians keep saying, why don't you bring that money back to the United States? Simple answer. The United States has the highest corporate tax rate in the world.
Highest in a developed country.
It's highest corporate tax rate. Well, I guess developed country. There may be Burma may have a corporate tax rate that they're not disclosing. 2 years ago, the highest tax rate was in Japan. And Abe changed the tax law as one of his first things in to lower the tax rate in Japan for corporations because it was causing money not to come home. This deal that was signed by Barack Obama, and I wouldn't place it at his feet because George W. Bush would have done the same thing, and every president that we've had would have done the same thing, of how do we get this money to come back? Well, we can't allow someone to transfer a bunch of money from the United States to overseas and then never pay taxes on the proceeds from that. So the concept of the law is everybody should be paying taxes. If you give a method in the law that says you don't have to pay taxes if you do these things, Congress has done that repeatedly. Sometimes they're called loopholes after the fact, but only when they're being closed. When they're not being closed, when they're being written into the law, it is to create jobs or something. Only when the flack starts coming in and saying, why aren't these companies paying taxes? Oh, that's a loophole. Somebody wrote it into the law intentionally. It went in there. Congress voted on it, and they said, don't tax people on money that they make somewhere else unless they bring it home, when we're talking about corporations. So corporations have been doing it and doing it properly. Their job, a corporation's job, is to make money for their shareholders, or in some cases, to not make money for their shareholders if the shareholders say that's what their job is. So keep that in mind when we're talking about evil corporations out there. They're going to do what's in their own best interest, and that means not bringing the money home. There are two things that we could do about that. We could say, we are requiring you to bring the money home, pay the taxes now, which will make their profits drop through the floor on any overseas money. It will make them less competitive against other people that are already overseas. And that's a problem. Or we can change the tax code.
Well,
it's a harder thing to do.
There's a simple issue here, really. In, for example, Europe, let me, Ireland is a really popular place to go with a corporation.
Right, because they have really good corporate tax rates in Ireland. The highest rate there is 7%.
But you see, their individual tax rates are very high.
Very high.
We've chosen in the United States to have a relatively high corporate income tax rate and a relatively low individual income tax rate.
Right.
In Europe, they have chosen to have low corporate rates and high personal rates.
Well,
so basically,
in Ireland, because France and Germany don't have that. They have higher tax rates. They're not American high, but they're really high. They're not 7% like Ireland.
Yeah, but in Europe in general, the corporate tax rates are lower. And throughout the rest of the developed world, corporate tax rates are lower and individual tax rates are higher. We have chosen in the United States to tax the corporation rather than tax the individual more. Yeah, we could lower our tax rates as low as Ireland's if we're willing to dramatically increase the taxes on individuals. And, you know, I think we got a pretty good system.
What I mean about changing the system is that if you have set up a methodology that would charge taxes in a fair way to corporations when they bring the money back. And by a fair way, I mean similar to what it's done to an individual. You have a certain amount that you can earn overseas that you pay taxes on overseas that you don't need to pay taxes on in the United States. It wasn't using American infrastructure to earn it. It wasn't using American taxpayer dollars in any way. You weren't to drain on the American system. That's a hard thing to put into law, though.
Well, you've got a subsidiary. Let's say Dell, for example, makes a lot of its computers in Ireland and ships them then to the European Union with good cause and good reason.
Yeah.
The reason, by the way, the corporate tax rates are so low in Ireland is because in Ireland they have a lot of unemployed workers.
Right, and they need jobs. So you bring the corporations there and they get jobs, and they're paying taxes.
It's actually very similar to a situation. Let me give you an example. If we were to do that locally, we'd understand it better. Let's just say that there is, an example. Let's say in Austin or Round Rock, Dell has their headquarters. And they say, we'd like to come to Temple and make computers. And Temple says, as a part of the deal, we're going to lower your property tax rate to zero.
Right.
If you will stay here for so many years.
Right.
Austin then could say, whoa, wait a minute. By moving that facility to Temple, you're cheating.
Because
you're lowering your taxes.
Because you're still based and founded in Austin, Round Rock, so you owe us taxes, too.
And so Round Rock then turn around and saying, hey, you need to pay us taxes that you didn't pay in Temple. And we would say that is unfair.
That's where it is in the corporate
world. And that's exactly what's going on in the corporate world. The idea, personally, you know, I realize
the system's broken.
Now the inversion idea.
That's a bad thing.
Is to say, there's a company, and was it Pfizer and Allergan? Allergan is in Great Britain, and it's actually the part of Allergan that they were going to be merging with was in Ireland,
right?
And which went there for the low taxes, by the way. And Pfizer, which is a huge corporation in the United States, was going to merge with Allergan. Now, there's the interesting thing because Allergan is smaller than Pfizer,
right?
But they were going to structure it in such a way that Allergan was going to buy Pfizer.
But they were going to do it with money that Pfizer was transferring to Allergan, which is where the inversion came in. They were taking a big chunk of money from the United States to buy into a merger while they were being purchased by an Irish company. So they were taking all this money overseas that they earned in the United States.
But they couldn't – you're right. We could change the law to make that impossible, except for one thing. There's a huge lobbying flow to keep that from happening.
See, I'm not saying that we change the law to make that impossible. I'm saying that we change the law to recognize what's going on. The reality is that Apple has a massive amount of money in other countries. And they would really much rather bring it back here. Google has a massive amount of money in other countries.
Right.
Amazon has money in other countries. Dell has money
in
other countries.
But they'd have to pay the tax difference.
They're not going to pay it because – and the reason why they want to bring it back is the best workers to get innovation are still in the United States. And that happens, you know, anytime you do a measurement there. When if you simple question, tech companies, top 100 tech companies in the world, where are they based? Well, 98 of them are in the United States. There's one in China.
I think they're in the Bahamas.
Yeah, right. So innovation.
They're all based in Panama.
Right. Innovation takes place here. And Apple doesn't hire a bunch of engineers in China or India or Britain or Germany to design the next iPhone. They design it in California. And they would much rather use the money that they earned overseas to reinvest in America. But they have to pay 35% of it.
Well, no.
Minus whatever they paid.
Right.
So if they paid 7% already,
they paid 25% in the mainland of Europe, for example, which a lot of them, they'd have to pay 10%.
10% more to bring it back. Yeah. But when you're talking about this much money, if they just leave it in Europe and reinvest in Europe, they never have to pay that extra
10%. But Congress would never change that law, and I read an analysis on that, for the very simple reason they're effectively giving a 5% tax break. They're giving a tax break to corporations to bring money back here.
Right.
And their constituents,
that's what it sounds like.
Their constituents.
We're only
like that.
We're only charging them 10% to bring it back. Is what the constituents say. Why are you treating these corporations so badly, or so great? They're only paying 10%, where everybody else is paying 35% if you're based here. And the reality is, they already paid 25% to somebody.
I want to issue a correction here, by the way. The Social Security file. I always called it file and forget. It's not. It's file and suspend. Loophole system officially closes on May 1st. And
well, so it closes April 30th, but it's the last day to use it. And that's, yeah, so go ahead. There's one day difference.
And it's closed on May 1st.
Right.
And you can still do it. But again, I've actually never met anybody it was in their best interest to do that. But then again, I haven't met everybody. Yeah. And I can say that one of the things about trying to do that at the last minute is it can be undone down the road by Congress, and they can literally go back and say everybody that did that in 2016, now listen carefully, everybody who did that in 2016, they can go 10 years in the future and say, everybody who did that in 2016, we paid you this much, too much money, you got to give it back.
Right. Or we're just not going to give it to you in the rest of the social security. And they've done that before. That's they've done it before on multiple different areas.
So trying to get through a loophole. Loopholes are actually pretty rare in today's financial world or in the tax world. There's always a cost to do them, and there's always a risk in doing them, and it's generally a bad idea to mess around with loopholes.
And that leads to the next subject. And the next subject is semi-part of this subject, and that's the Panama Papers. A law firm in Panama was hacked, and in being hacked, they released a whole bunch of the internal emails.
As opposed to a half
file,
bunch.
Yes, not a half bunch,
this
a whole bunch.
This particular whole bunch is over 11 million.
Right. We're talking about huge numbers of files on specific legal dealings of a lot of people that were using this law firm. And the way the media has covered it has surprised me again, because it's sort of completely blind to the fact that there were a lot of people here that were doing nothing wrong. Yeah, absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, the president of Ukraine is a great example. When he was elected, he said he was going to sell his chocolate company. So in selling his chocolate company, he said, I'm not going to manage it at all. I'm going to have it completely out of my hands because I don't want to make any decisions that I know is going to profit me. So he set up a company through Panama to put his money there because you don't really want to put money in Ukraine right now.
Why?
And sent it there, and he's explained it to his people very clearly. What's missing here in the news coverage is that a lot of people breaking no laws, there are people that broke laws here, don't get me wrong, there are definitely people that broke laws, but a lot of people breaking no laws had all of their private dealings let loose to the public. Mm-hmm. If that happened, if Bank of America got hacked and all these people's investments and planning and all of that came out to the public, we would have this outcry of privacy violation. But because it happened in Panama, and it happened in such a way – that all there are these big known figures. It's celebrities, so they don't deserve their privacy. And we have a caller.
All right. You
caller
on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning. My subject's a little off. I've heard that if you have IRS over $10,000, you could get help. Would y'all have that number?
No, we don't have the number.
Nope.
I'm sorry. You could probably Google it. And
you'll get a lot of hits there.
A lot of people who would love to charge you a certain amount of money to
lower your
help
tax
you
bill.
Deal with the IRS.
I've heard, advertised that they could help you over $10,000 debt.
Actually, your first bet is to go to either a CPA or a tax preparer who is registered with the IRS as an enrolled agent and get them to contact the IRS and work out a plan for you.
That's the easiest way to do it and the least expensive, because if you say, I can't pay this much money, the IRS really wants to get paid. And if they say, we're going to take all your money because we want to get paid, and you say, well, that means I won't make any money ever again, so I will never pay you, then the IRS goes, let's figure this out.
And if you actually call the IRS, now this is a lousy time of year to try to call the IRS,
yes,
but if you were to call the IRS and actually get somebody and say, look, I owe you a bunch of money, you've sent me the notice, I'd like to pay you, but I can't afford to pay how much I owe you, can we work out a deal? They will work out a deal with you.
And that's what these... If you owe $10,000 or more on your to the IRS, what they're doing is exactly that. They're negotiating for you, and then you pay them for a long time afterwards.
It is conceivable, and that's why they want big money, because they want a percentage. It's conceivable that the person, if the IRS is, you can't afford to pay, and the IRS says we're going to come and take your oldest daughter away or something like that.
Yeah. Or at least her arm. Put her in a tower,
hair
grow long.
There's local attorneys, one of whom had the show just before ours, who deal with that all the time. And that's, very frankly, if I had a choice between going to a mindless bunch of attorneys out somewhere, and I had a choice between going to Ed Laughlin, Jeff McClure would choose Ed Laughlin. I'm not endorsing Ed Laughlin. I'm simply saying he's one of the guys that advertises that he does that, okay?
Yeah.
And you can look him up.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
We've got some commercials to play, and I want to finish up on the Panama Papers at the end of that.
So at the end of the commercials, or you want to do it now?
I can do it now. Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
so basically what I'm saying is that the ethical thing that we're completely ignoring is that all this somebody hacked into a law firm. In the United States, if you have a dealing with a law firm, you know the whole thing about client attorney privileges where the prosecutor can't know what's going on, or if you're talking to an attorney about your finances and you're trying to figure out the best way to move forward, there's a protection there. And it's a protection that there's a process that the authorities can go through, particularly in the financial side, to get access to that information. But it's a very clear process, one that our founding fathers and a lot of people since then have said is an important thing that the government shouldn't know. If someone were to hack a law firm in the United States, the FBI would be involved in trying to figure out who did it and getting them imprisoned. And the law firm would be supplying free identity theft protection for years and years to the people involved.
Yeah, if anybody hacked like the IRS and got everybody's tax returns.
That's already happened, hasn't it?
No, it would be impossible for such a thing to happen.
Right, and it's happened a couple of times. So when we're looking at this, the Panama Papers, they made a big splash because Prime Minister Cameron had his father involved with a financial deal that was done through this law firm, and he profited from it. Well, yeah, he profited from his father's business. His father paid him $30,000. That's the end of the deal. And we're hearing how he's apologizing to Parliament for not handling this properly. It should have been handled properly. They should have said at the beginning, this was a private business deal that is not unusual.
Well,
and yes, I made money. But look, he reported that same $30,000 in his election.
Mm-hmm.
He reported it. But he's getting flack because he reported it, but he didn't say that it was at a Panama law firm.
Then on
instead
the
of a British law firm.
Of course, there's the other side of that, and that is a bunch of friends of Putin
yeah.
who have this, somehow started up magical businesses that have made tremendous amounts
right.
of money, and they've kept it all in Panama, and they didn't pay taxes in Russia.
Correct. Now,
and,
that side, and when I said at the beginning of there was wrongdoing that happened here. There are a lot of dictators that took money out of the country that they were running that they didn't earn that was taxpayer stuff that they just have been taking away and putting other places. That's well, not cool.
One of the articles I read today, and again, I'm not sure. I haven't seen all 11 million pieces of paper.
You need to wait until you see them all before you make an opinion.
But apparently, so far, no Americans.
Well, there have been a couple of Americans, but not a lot of Americans.
And that's a pretty interesting concept in and of itself.
And it's because the American government has made it really hard on law firms outside of the United States to do tax hiding.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult. Now, there were Americans involved, and you were saying no Americans. No Americans with wrongdoing.
Yeah, well,
there are 60-plus Americans so far that have been released by the media in this, which is horrible because those 60-plus Americans didn't break any laws. And the media is just busily releasing all of their personal information. And that gets me a little steamed.
Well, we're going to have to break for commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. The telephone number in here is area code 254, of course, and it's 773-1400. And we're going to have several minutes of commercials here so that KTEM and Town Square Media can stay on the air and continue to pay the electric bill. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone numbers in here have not changed, although they have moved quite a long distance because the Earth has turned and it is going around the sun and the sun is going around the galaxy, but the number hasn't changed, and it's still 254-773-1400.
Yes.
So much for Heisenberg. Hey, I wanted to say something about the Labor Department, other than the fact that they announced the final version of the fiduciary rule and ticked off all the people who don't want to act in their customers' best interest. And the politicians that get paid by the people who don't want to act in their customers' best interest. In February, employers in the United States hired 5.4 million people. I want you to think about that just a minute.
That's a lot of people.
5.4 million people were hired.
I don't think we could fit them in the room.
Probably not. Now, why did the unemployment rate actually rose just a little bit?
Yep.
It went from 4.9 to 5, despite the fact that there were a lot more people hired than there were quit their jobs and fired. Very few people fired. Actually, there were 2.9 million people who voluntarily quit, which is a very, very good sign.
Yes, that's one of those signs that causes economists to go, woohoo, and people go, why are you excited about people quitting their jobs?
And the
reason.
But
Is
not
that...
Not too hard, though.
Yeah, I will only hit it lightly.
Okay.
The reason why people quitting their jobs cause economists to go, woohoo, is because people generally only quit their job if they know they can get another job soon.
Mm-hmm. The net... If you balance out all the people who got hired, go ahead, I'm sorry.
In the Great Recession, people stopped quitting. That number was a very low rate. It
so
was never
quit.
In the millions. They stopped quitting their jobs because they were afraid they weren't going to get one if they quit.
So they quit quitting.
They quit quitting. What quitters?
Yes, I got to think about that. Anyway, the net, if you take all the people who quit their jobs, all the people who got laid off, which is not a lot, and... you look at the net results, we added 245,000 jobs in February and 215,000 jobs in March to the economy. In other words, net, we have a lot more people working. In those 2 months alone, we net employed about 500,000 more people than were employed at the end of January. And yet, the unemployment rate rose from 4.9 to 5%. Now, why is that? Because at the same time as we were hiring 5.4 million people, another 2 or 3 million people entered the job market and started looking for work. And because of the time of year it is, I am quite confident saying they didn't just graduate from college. It's people who were discouraged who see the job market opening up around them. Now, add to that that the average wage year over year from a year ago has gone up 2.5%. Add to that that a lot of people who are now working who weren't working before are at the entry level and will work their way up. And what that says to those of us who read the leetives, or the tea leaves, as the case may be.
I like owl droppings better.
Yes, they are. Well, they're slippery.
Yes.
And the is that sometime in the not very far distant future, there will be a lot of people who are making a lot more money than they were making before. And the end result is that we will see a significant increase in money available to be spent by members of the consumer group in the United States who make up 70% of our GDP. Now, there's another one. The Fed just came out with a, was it the Fed? No, it was the Commerce Department. Just came out with a good number that I'm kind of excited. It takes them a while to figure out what went on in the fourth quarter. Like they just now have figured, they've just now come out with their third estimate of last year's GDP.
Right. I saw that.
But the net worth of U.S. households in the United States rose to $86.8 trillion by the end of the fourth quarter last year.
That's now, very nice. I don't have $86 trillion.
You know, when you start talking about the budget deficit and the this is and the that's and
the
you
debt owed by the government.
And you look at all of this stuff and you realize this is not counting corporations. It's not counting land owned by the government or the local government. This is not land owning by companies. This is not building owning by companies. This is households have a net worth. Now, when I say net worth,
that's assets minus debts.
Minus debts of something. And by now, if it continued to grow at the same speed, we're talking about $90 trillion. And that's a really, really big number. And if you had to write it out, you'd have to write a lot of zeros.
That's trillion is big.
Yeah, it's $90,000 billion.
$90 million.
Yes, 90 million, but million is, I can't even.
Yeah, it's big. It's really, really big.
So this is good news. And I said earlier that the stock market has been, in essence, you got a portfolio that's got stocks and bonds, and it's a typical portfolio. I would not be at all surprised if you looked at the two-year return, it's negative, flat to negative. That's normal. We're going through this transition. But underneath there's an engine that ultimately drives corporate earnings in the United States, that ultimately drives our economy, and that is what the condition of American households are, because ultimately everything that's made, all but 12% of what we make in the United States is purchased by and used by, ultimately, American consumers.
Right. Households. Us.
And American consumers just hit a record number. That $90 trillion is a record number for net assets in the United States of Americans. We are seeing the wages are now at the total earned money, even after accounting for inflation, is now higher than it's ever been in the history of the United States. These
this
are things
that
you won't hear much about, but that doesn't mean they're not real.
Yeah.
They're there.
This isn't part of the bad news dialogue that has to be said to sell papers or to sell advertisements on a television show. It's probably why our ratings are so good, is that we are actually saying good news. And
yeah, like they're like we're syndicated across the country. The reason that you don't see the economy taking off and going like gangbusters is really simple. It's not because the consumer's not spending, because we just broke records for car sales. Housing prices are rising. We're starting to see construction pick up again. There's actually three big things going on. One, we're saving more than we used to, which is not a bad deal.
Right.
Number two, there are three elements in our economy right now that are slowing the train down to the point that they are damaging the short-term economic growth. And one of them is the unrelenting negativity that's coming out of the presidential campaigns.
Right.
And people are scared, so they're not spending money and they're not investing money. Number two is the price of oil. And number three are interest rates. And
I would throw a fourth one.
What's the fourth one you want to throw in?
The fourth one is a productivity drop. What we have had since the end of the bottom in 2008, where the Great Recession was really going badly, we had this tremendous productivity gain. I mean, by tremendous, I mean, this is stuff that you just don't see very often when looking at it. By often, I mean, you don't see it except every 60 years or so, this kind of productivity increase. And the reason was corporations had to lay people off and they had to do more with less people.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured out, all right, how can we change the technology? How can we change the man hours? We got to get this productivity up because we got to do the same stuff. We just have to charge less for it or we're going to go out of business. So these workers worked harder and harder and harder, and the technology didn't quite keep up with the productivity. So they were working themselves into meltdown. They were working so hard that they were burning out. So the productivity in the last year has started to drop. We've said for years that when that happens is when the hiring really starts. So this hiring is starting, but it's going to take a while for the new hires to pick up the abilities
to learn
to get
what they're
trained
doing. Right.
So that they can go back to that productivity going up. So there's a short-term slowdown. Because people are trained, people that were already burned out are now training people to do what they're doing, and they're tired. They're expected to keep up with what they're doing, and that's what's going on.
I think you're going to see productivity pick up for a couple of reasons. Number one, as you mentioned, is you hire new people, they're not very productive.
Right. And why are we hiring these people? They come in here and they don't know what they're doing.
It takes a year or two to get production. The other thing is we are close enough to full employment. 4% unemployment is effectively full employment. We're close enough to full employment that the wages, probably within the next year, you're going to see wages go up. You're going to see next year, at the very least, you're going to see the Fed probably raising interest rates to fight off inflation. And at that point, it's going to become economically efficient for corporations to start buying more computers for these new people that are now a year or two into the job.
Buying new computers, new robots, new artificial things.
You know, I want to get back to the oil and interest rates, but there's another article that came out that I thought was really fascinating in The Economist, I think it was. Wages have risen dramatically in China.
Yes.
Skilled workers'
wages.
That's
part of the reason why companies are leaving China at the moment.
And so the Chinese are doing almost exactly what the Japanese did at the same point in their expansion, which means that they're probably going to follow, they're following the same pattern.
Right. And to slow down for a bit.
Well, no. They are buying robots at a phenomenal rate of speed. They are building and buying automation to replace the low wage earner worker that they used to have that's now moved up the chain. And so, if you may, those of you who are really old may remember when Japan was going to take over the world, and Back to the Future was they estimated that by 2015 we'd all be speaking Japanese, and the Japanese would own all the corporations and everything.
That was Back to the Future too.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, at any rate,
where they actually go to the future.
When they actually fell on their face later on, and the United States kept going.
Right.
And the Chinese, for whatever it's worth, are following exactly the same pattern. They're automating their systems about as fast. It's really fascinating to see that they're following the same pattern. Now, I'd like to get back in this last little bit to oil and interest rates.
I have something to add at the end too. It's just a good news piece. So go ahead.
Really, really low interest rates have reached about the point of, they've actually hit the point of diminishing returns at this point. One of the reasons that the market as a whole, the stock market, has not done well is banks are really hurting as far as profitability is concerned. Banks in general, and even investment banks, base most of their earnings on being able to have us deposit. Somebody deposits money at, let's say, I know this sounds like a ridiculously high number. Let's say you deposit money at 3% and they loan it out at 7%.
They make profit.
They make a profit all that after that, even with the possibility that the loan can go bad, even with all the people they have to have and all the work they have to do and the tellers and everything else.
Right.
When interest rates are negative, it is or near negative or at 1% or very, very low, it is extremely hard for financial institutions to make any money.
That's why they're trying all these new techniques to make money that everybody keeps saying that's a horrible thing.
Well, and there's a couple of warning issues here, but there's the big one is, this is what I want to tell people who have a portfolio, if you're investing in it or if you're trying to live off of it, recognize that we're going through a flat period. Be patient with that flat period, knowing that there will be a catch-up at some point. Historically, we can look back and say, whenever we've had these very, very flat periods in the market, reversion of the mean jumps up and they suddenly jump to go back to normal at some point. The question is, are you going to be able to wait long enough? If you're taking money from your portfolio to live on, you need to do the same thing the banks are doing and the same thing financial institutions are doing. You got to trim expenses and hunker down and be patient and wait for things for the interest rates to come back up. Interest rates will come up at some point. They have historically. I can tell you they either will or the entire economy will collapse.
Right.
And they're being held down artificially to try to stimulate the economy. I think we've probably run out of the ability to do that effectively. And I'm hoping that we can go back to what's called quantitative easing, where we put more money into the economy. We'll see if that happens. But this is the point. Be patient. Hang in there. We're in a game of last man standing. But above all, do not be suckered into something that offers you a higher interest rate and claims that it is safe. Every one of those deals will blow up on you. If you have somebody offering you an annuity, for example, and they say, we'll guarantee you 4% or we'll guarantee you 7%, and I've heard people tell me they've heard people say this. I haven't heard it said, but I've heard people tell me that their friends are buying annuities and they've told their friends have told them they're guaranteed 7%. First off, nobody's guaranteeing 7%. Secondly, if somebody is out there offering you a higher interest rate like that, that company is headed for a fall. And you not only will you not get the 7, you may get the 7% for a short period of time, but what you will do is lose your principal. And this, so just be aware that you can't beat the system. You got to roll with the system, and you got to work with it.
You
and
can
be
take
patient.
Advantage of the system.
Right.
You could get ahead by using the system better, and that's one of the issues. So I'm going to hit a real quick health related item, if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right. We've been talking about short term economic situation. We talked about kind of mid range, 2 or 3 years out after employment comes up and payment to these people that are employed comes up. Now I'm going to take it a further distance into the future and kind of let you know a big chunk of why we're optimistic when people are talking about optimism. Metformin is a type 2 diabetes drug that has begun human trials in London as a method of fighting age. It's the first drug trial that's gotten to humans that treats age as a disease. In mice, it added 30% to the life expectancy of a mouse. It may not be that good for humans. It may be much less than that for humans. But we're talking about adding decades to our life, and if we get the same kind of results in humans as we did in rats, then we're talking about 120-year-old for the people that are alive today being healthy at 120 instead of 90. And that means something for Social Security, obviously. Next, Duke University just put out a study in Nature this week. They've been studying zebrafish. Are you familiar with zebrafish at all?
I haven't actually known one personally, but I've seen them.
They have stripes. They are called zebrafish. They are also known because you cut off one of their fins and it grows back. If you damage their heart repairs itself over time. If it doesn't kill them, they can grow it back. There are a lot of lizards that grow tails back. Well, looking at the zebrafish at Duke, they identified the genes that were growing fins back, and they identified the genes that were growing the heart back, and they activated those genes in mice and grew paws back on mice and grew heart tissue on mice. Now the next question is, how far can you go with that? I mean, if we're able to grow heart tissue on a mouse in a mouse, what about growing heart tissue out of the mouse with the same technique and eventually humans? What I'm saying here is that technology is progressing to make our standard of living and our quality of life go up, not down. Even through this flat period in the market, people have better cars, better televisions, better washers and dryers, better houses. You just go down the list, and our quality of life is improving. We've got a caller waiting. That was my thing. What we're doing with our quality of life, with the innovations that are happening, that's going to be recognized. It's kind of the underlying growth factor in the entire economy. Why we can say historically the market has gone up is because historically all of those underlying factors with quality of life and the ability for us to do more with less have gone up too. We're continuing to do that. If I saw people in the United States stop innovating, stop being at the forefront of new inventions and new technology, then I would say watch out. Well, but I'm not seeing that.
Well, Nature reports in that, by the way, it's volume 522, issue 7556, that article is in about anti-aging drugs. The companies, including the ones that make metformin, are approaching the USDA and asking for permission to treat aging
as
an experimental
disease.
By the way, it's legal in England. It's illegal in the United States to prescribe anything as an anti-aging drug.
Right, because it's not been recognized by our government as a problem yet.
Mm-hmm. And so,
which seems like a little bit of a weird thing. Well,
hopefully we'll cross over them. But there are still some people who are very, very skeptical and say that these anti-aging drugs just exchange one disease for another. And we have a caller. You've got to be real quick on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Fast, fast.
Hello, caller.
Okay, we can't take you. We're down to the last minute of the hour. Thanks for the call, though. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail during the weekends and a wonderful staff of real live human beings that answer the phone during the week. And you can reach that our number locally at
947-1111. That's a hard one to remember now, 947-1111.
You can reach it toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, listen to podcasts, see our ugly mugs and our beautiful staff. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And if you get the chance to read our philosophy, I encourage it. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.